This podcast is a production of Bread on the Water Media and RadioForThePeople.com and is engineered by Audio Diner Studios. Our theme music is provided to us by our dear friend Gordon Bonham, whose music can be purchased through GordonBonham.com. Our graphics for this podcast are provided by Kathy Piercy Frine. The podcast is sponsored by Artisan Realtors and Silicon Prairie Ventures.
This podcast is intended to give people a glimpse at what it's like to get a bad diagnosis, whether it's cancer or something else, and then go through a traumatic experience. First, we will discuss how my cancer story affected me and my family. Then we will talk about how their experiences affect other patients and their families, including discussions around why you need to advocate for yourself or for your family member. As we explore other patients' experiences, we will talk to some professionals about how to move forward after a traumatic, or not, medical event. I expect this to be a discussion that changes over time to reflect these combined experiences that I and others have had, and what our journeys are like, and the inevitable twists and turns that go along with real-world experiences. Join us on this ride as we attempt to show joy and laughter as well as the tragedy. Well, good morning. Welcome to episode 10, I think, of Normal, What's That Like? And before we get started, let's thank a couple of people who've helped us out a little bit. First of all, we'll thank Gordon Bonham for our intro music and exit music. And his stuff is available if you're interested in GordonBonham.com. I also need to thank Kat Fryan for the artwork that, if you're watching the video, is over my right shoulder. But if you're not watching the video, you can go to the website if you want at normalwhatsthatlike.com and you can see it there. So, with that, I'm going to hand it back to Kevin.
All right. Well, as I remembered, it's been a while. Our last episode, you were in remission. So how's that remission going for you, Dan?
Well, it's been a very interesting 6 months, or it's actually probably more than that, maybe 7 months now. So oddly, I'm going to throw out a few what I'll call colloquialisms here. Oddly, last year on race day, which people say, race day, what?
Yeah.
If you're not from Indianapolis, that's the day of the Indianapolis 500. But if you live here and you say race day, everyone knows what you're talking about.
It's the day we all look for the return of Jesus. we know it's going to be associated with that. But you know.
So race day, and I'm also going to talk about the track. And the track is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but everybody in Indianapolis just says the track.
So I of course have some inside knowledge that our listeners don't have, and that's why I posed that question of how was remission going for you. Some of the reason we haven't recorded in 7 months is things changed for you a little bit, right?
Yeah, on race day last year, I went to the race, and for those of you who remember it, the race in 2024. Rained a lot in the morning, and the race didn't actually take place till later in the afternoon. I took my son-in-law for his first Indianapolis 500. My daughter went, and my brother went with us. And something odd just happened, and that was George Ann makes this potato salad that I just love, and she went to the trouble of making this special potato salad so we could pack it and take it with us to the race. And I ate the potato salad at lunch, and I started having indigestion, for lack of a better term. I started burping, and I thought, that's really weird. This never gives me indigestion. But that did continue the rest of the day.
And didn't have anything to do with alcohol.
No, I didn't drink very much that day. I drank a little bit, but I didn't drink much.
I mean, that's race day. That's kind
yeah,
of
I did that, drink a little okay. bit, but it was raining. You know, it wasn't sunny and shiny and right. all that kind of stuff. But I might have had a Bloody Mary or one or two. But as I didn't think much about it after that. I told her, I think, when I got home, but just thought it was nothing, no big deal. But the next day, the day after that, and the day after that, this indigestion continued, and it was getting worse. It was getting to the point where it was really bad that I was afraid to eat much of anything. And so I think we decided on Tuesday, I didn't do it, Monday was a holiday. On Tuesday, I called my doctor, and she said, let's get a CAT scan. I'm like, that wasn't what I wanted to hear.
I was hoping you'd give me a prescription Tums.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she did give me a prescription for, I can't think of it, Georgianne, what's that pill that I took before I ate?
Reglan.
But that didn't really seem to help. I had a CAT scan. It took a week or so to get it scheduled. But on June 9th, I had a CAT scan. And I think she called me. I don't remember. I didn't have this written down. I looked at notes this morning and I didn't have it written down. But she called me that day or the next day and said, hey, you need to come in. Let's schedule an appointment. And so we went in and did both girls go with us? I think so. Both Jessica and Maggie went with us. And she pulled up, the first thing she did was pull up the image of the CAT scan. And there was a tumor, I think 10 centimeters by 5 centimeters or something like that. So fairly large tumor. And I had just had a clear scan in January. So this is the end of May, the 1st of June. So in 5 months, I somehow had grown a pretty big tumor. And there were some other things on there, but in the end, it turns out they were all false images or nothing. But so all of a sudden, I have this big tumor. And she obviously had seen the scan before we had and had already looked into some treatment options. And, you know, she suggested that I had a couple of options. First of all, she suggested a clinical trial that used a drug called epcoritamab, which is an immunotherapy, along with a couple chemotherapy drugs.
And that MAB part is a monoclonal antibody for
correct.
Those who are,
yeah.
Which is the big, we say that because that's the big word these days. And so, yeah, it's one of the monoclonal antibodies.
Right. And so it also, the trial also was with dexamethasone, which is a steroid. And then there were two
chemotherapy
drugs, cisplatin and gencitabine. And she suggested I start with that, and then that after that, if there was anything left, we would have to have a scan, if there was any tumor left, I had a couple of options. The first option would be to have a stem cell transplant, which where they take my own cells and kind of radiate them and make sure they're clean and retransplant them into my body. But her preference was something called CAR T therapy, which I knew a little bit about, but not a lot about at the time. I know a lot about it now, but CAR T therapy is where they take actual white cells from my body, they genetically modify them to where they actually cut down and kill the cancer. And I'll talk more about that as we go on with this, but that was her suggestion. Her first suggestion, her priority, if we as we go forward.
And they may modify them some, but part of the reason they're taking your cells is because your cells have already set themselves up to fight that cancer in particular. So they've already got a head start, right? And then they just do some further modification to make it easier for those cells to get to the
correct. Target. And the other piece of that is my body won't reject them.
Right.
Otherwise you're more like transplant and you stand the chance of your body rejecting those cells and,
right.
and different things. So the clinical trial, I actually started, I get the first treatment fairly soon, June 21st, because it was a clinical trial, you have to jump through some hoops. I had to have a scan, another PET scan, which I had, had one again, as I said, in January, I had to have another PET scan. They had to have a piece of my tissue proving that that my cancer was actually the diffuse B cell, large B cell lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so they had to get that from the tissue bank. And I had to pass, I had to have a heart scan. I had to have a test to make sure my lungs were functioning properly. I had to have a chest x-ray. I had to have jump through quite a few hoops. And actually some of that was repeated later. But anyway, I started on June 21st. And at that first, the first dose, I only got a half dose of the epcoritamab on the first dose, because before you can get a full dose, you have to be observed in the hospital because you can develop some side effects. So I got a half dose of the epcoritamab, the full dose of the cisplatin and the gemcitabine and the dexamethasone, and from that point, I felt like death warmed over. I'll start this early and say that that experience of that clinical trial probably is the most difficult thing I've ever gone through in my life. It was 9 weeks, and I was to have treatment once a week. Because of my side effects, they opted not to give me the cisplatin the second week. I had the gemcitabine and the dexamethasone and the epcoritamab, again, a half dose. And then I was scheduled to go in the hospital and be observed and get the full dose the next time around. Unfortunately, on July 5th, I was running a fever, I was running a fever, which they tell you, if you're running a fever above 101, that you need to go directly to the emergency room. We did not do that on the 4th of July because we knew that not a lot was going to happen. So we went out on July 5th. Unfortunately, I was admitted. I was septic. I had sepsis. I had three different bugs that I tested positive for. So I had to have IV antibiotics for 5 days before they would release me from the hospital. And then I had to have ongoing antibiotics for another 3 weeks. They were not IV. At first, they thought they were going to have me do IV antibiotics at home, but they came up with another solution, which I was glad about. But again, this whole idea of not feeling well, added to the thing. We were scheduled the next weekend then to go in. They put it off. My original weekend was that following weekend to have my clinical, to have this full dose and be observed and all that. That got postponed just by a few days. So I did that the following week, and that went well. They just had me, basically they asked me every hour on the hour, to count backwards from 100 by fives, to write my name, write a sentence, and, just ask me, if they'd held up some items and asked me if I knew what they were. And so they were doing that either once an hour or every 2 hours, I can't remember. And they were taking blood fairly frequently, but I didn't have any issues with that, and I was able to go home after the 24 hours and continue with the clinical trial. I think the next time they also tried to give me like a half dose of cisplatin, and then I got the gemcitabine and the other, and I couldn't get off the couch. Mm-hmm. It was just horrible, and so. Really, I think, and Georgianne, I think, concurs with me, I don't think I got any chemotherapy from that point forward. I might have gotten gemcitabine one more time, but I did not get any more cisplatin through the 9 weeks. I got the full dose of epcoritamab and the dexamethasone, and there's also a drug they give you afterwards that's supposed to produce more antibodies to increase your antibodies, and that all went well. And so, you know, every time I went in, they could look at me and tell how bad I felt, and they just said, let's just stick with what we're doing. And again, the trial was for the epcoritamab, and the other drugs were kind of a standard cocktail, but they opted, because of how I was reacting to them, to really stick mostly with the immunotherapy. Mm-hmm. And as I said, that 9 weeks, probably the most difficult thing I've ever gone through in my life. I literally laid on the couch and moaned and groaned and didn't hardly get up except for to go to the doctor the next Friday to get another treatment. And I was having to get some supplements because, you know, they do your blood work before they'll give you the drugs. And I didn't have enough fluid or enough sodium once, and several times magnesium.
But you're good with your potassium.
My potassium, yeah. Well, Kevin could talk about potassium. I don't think I had a potassium problem. But we got through that, and I slowly got to feeling better, and probably it took a long time. I mean, that 9 weeks was over, I think, around the end of August, maybe it was mid-August. But anyway, I felt like by around October the 1st, or maybe September, I think we went out to eat in September. My friend Kent and his wife Leanne were down from Michigan, and we actually all went out to eat, and I decided I was ready to try to eat some more exotic foods, and that was a mistake. I had lobster ravioli, and I also had 5 glasses of wine, and I paid for it for the next couple of days.
I'm thinking we all would have paid for it. It sounds like it.
But anyway, we got through it, and we had another PET scan. And the trial had done great work. That trial had shrunk my tumor by 90%.
In what period of time?
It was a 9-week trial.
And in 9 weeks, it had dropped.
Yeah, I think, and again, they continued, that stuff continues to work for a little while. I think it was a couple weeks after the last dose before I actually got my scan. And so, since there was still some tumor left, I was still going to have to do something else, because there was still, you know, there was still cancer there. And obviously, if you let it go, it's going to grow back and continue to grow. So we decided we were going to move forward with the CAR T therapy. And again, I had to jump through some more hoops, some of those same tests over again, and fun things like that. But we got through that. And we were scheduled to be admitted on October 28th, 3 days before Halloween, which doesn't mean much if you're an adult with no kids or grandkids, but I have 3 grandkids that I was a little disappointed that, you know, I was going to miss Halloween.
And it's also Irvington.
And it's also, in our community, Halloween's a really big deal. There's a big festival that goes on for a week, and all kinds of fun stuff. And I didn't really participate in much of that at all. I did go briefly to the festival and, spent an hour or so down there. And
so let me just step back a little bit from what you were saying. In a way, hearing the news that, there's still 10% of this cancer here, it would be disappointing initially, but it's actually the thing that got you this into this trial, right? Had it gotten rid of all the cancer, you wouldn't have gone into the CAR-T, is that right?
Yeah, and the CAR-T is not a trial. The CAR-T is a therapy. The clinical trial was the second thing. But to per the FDA regulations, to qualify for CAR-T with my diagnosis, you have to have had 2 lines of treatment and still have some cancer showing. So Dr. Rossi, which she had never told me in advance, said, well, it's kind of good that you have a little bit of cancer left, because otherwise we can't go forward with the next step.
Wow.
So yes, there was some good news there, I suppose. I mean, I kind of You know, when they tell you, oh, there's 10% of the tumor left, that's good news.
Yeah.
I had to think about that for a minute.
Right.
But I was committed to go forward with the CAR T, and so we did. On October 3rd, I had a procedure called apheresis, which is where they pull the blood out of me and put it back into me, but they separate the white cells, and they get some red cells too, just because they can't not. But they, you know, they have what's the thing that spins real fast? Anyway, they determine how they can get the white cells.
Centrifuge. Sorry.
And they determine how they can get the white cells. They have to make sure they've collected enough and got enough and all that. And, you know, we were there about 3 hours. It took about 3 hours for the procedure. It was pretty painless, other than they had to put a tube in my neck where they were drawing the blood in and out. But other than that, it really was pretty easy procedure. And there are no side effects other than a little bit of just soreness in that one spot. There was not much for a day or two afterwards. So then for the month of October, I was beginning to feel better, beginning to gain a little strength and all those kinds of things. But I was admitted on the 28th. The other thing that I wasn't completely clear on is that she had talked to me about, you have to have this dose of chemotherapy to condition your cells to be ready for the CAR T therapy. And I kind of thought, you know, I didn't ask enough questions. I kind of thought, well, that clinical trial I'd just done, that kind of...
What's the work?
Took care of that, but actually I was wrong.
Oh, no.
So on the 29th and 30th, I also got chemotherapy with a drug called bendamustine. Luckily, it didn't seem to have any side effects, at least at the time, whatsoever. And I was able to, you know, I had made a commitment that I was going to walk 15 to 20 minutes twice a day while I was in the hospital, which, if you had seen, I was on the transplant ward at the hospital. And if you'd seen how big this is, walking 20 minutes, it was kind of a U-shaped hallway, and you basically just had to walk one way about half a block, walk another way, and maybe two blocks, and then turn around and go back. And so it was pretty monotonous, but I continued to, I think I might have missed one day while I was in the hospital of walking 20 minutes twice a day. So trying to keep myself energetic and up. So then after the chemotherapy, they have you set one day and not do anything to kind of regain your strength, is the idea. Although, as I said, I really didn't have any side effects from the chemotherapy. But on 11-1 was the day, or infusion day. And they really kind of make a big deal out of it. And it is a big deal because, you know, you're basically going to be, you are going to be genetically modified. As a human being, you know, they're...
Does that prevent you from coming to some restaurants with us?
Yeah, it's not going to prevent me from going to restaurants. But I have to carry a card in my pocket for physicians to let them know that I have had this procedure.
And any chance you're in, I guess.
Yeah, and there are some drugs. I guess we have a friend who's a nurse in a clinic, and she said she read on the drug, you know, that do not use with CAR T therapy patients. So obviously there's some general knowledge out there about that. But so the cell infusion, they bring in this kind of big cart, and there's a big cylinder, you know, kind of like you see when you think of in the movies when they have like plutonium in a thing. That was exactly the kind of thing that this was in. And they open it.
When you sent the pictures, it looked like something from Andromeda Strange.
Right. The liquid nitrogen, you know, big cloud.
And you're thinking,
smoke.
You're going to put that freezing cold stuff inside of me.
Well, he did tell me in advance that they're going to warm them up to room temperature before they actually.
Okay.
So So how did they warm them up in room temperature? They kind of set them on this little thing, but not for very long. Honey, would you say it was more than a minute? Maybe 2 minutes?
Just a water bath.
Yeah, just a water bath. And
just enough to...
Had it there for a minute or two. Then they took, and I have the... I don't know if they were supposed to let me take this home or not, but I have the...
original packet.
The original packet that my cells were in, they're genetically modified cells. By the way, the process was Kymriah, and this is actually what the cells were in. And I mean, they were only just, it was only full to about here. And, you know, it took about a minute to put them in. You know, they did it through an IV, and then that was it.
And I mean, they were serious about this stuff because those guys were, in the video you sent, those guys were suited up. I mean,
yeah, and for those of you who look at some of my videos, I have a video that I will share that shows that process. It's about 12 minutes long, but that again, that was start to finish. That was from the time they came into the room to the time they left was 12 minutes. That's how long it took. So from that point, supposedly, I was going to have to stay in the hospital another 10 days for observation, again, looking for mostly neurological signs and fevers. There's a couple of tracks of side effects you can get from your body's reaction to the cells coming in. One of them is called ICANS, and the other is called...
ICANS.
No. Do you remember what it's called, George? I don't know. But one of them has to do with fever, etc. The other one has to do with neurological CR something. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
CRS?
CRS. Yeah. Yes, yeah, CRS. And that's cytokine release syndrome.
That's not what I thought it stood for. Can't remember. Never mind.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah, and that worked in this case.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't remember. But CRS would be the other one. And so they watched me, and I think on day 5, I got just a little bit of a fever, not much of a fever at all, and it went away. I did have a weird instance occur, and I did share it with them. While I was in the hospital, we've got the TV on, and it's on to the Today Show, the third hour, and it's Hoda and Jenna. And I'm laying in the bed watching this, and all of a sudden, as far as I knew, I was on the couch in between Hoda and Jenna. And I thought that to be a little strange. And I shared it with them. They thought it was...
You shared it with Hoda and Jenna?
No. I shared it with the nurses and the doctors. They thought it was probably a reaction more from the drugs that they were giving me
to take away
some symptoms. So from the day I got the my injection forward, and for a year, I will take a dose of antiviral in the morning and the evening, every day. But they also had me on anti-seizure medication, and I had to take 2 pills of that in the morning and the evening. And what I found out was later that that causes a crazy amount of side effects, the anti-seizure medicine. I was also on antibiotics because, again, your immune system is pretty compromised. Because the whole idea is the bendamustine is supposed to, like, knock your immune system down, and then these new cells kind of create a new immune system. And some people get what they call neutropenic, which is their immune system basically goes to zero. I did not experience that, but it went down, but it went back up, and my white cell count has been pretty good since about week 3. I was supposed to take this anti-seizure medicine and different antibiotics for a month, and then I was off. Then I would get off of the anti-seizure medicine, and what I found was that first 30 days, again, not nearly as bad as during the clinical trial, but I spent a lot of time on the couch and or sleeping. Mm-hmm. We had to go once a week after they discharged me on day 8 because I didn't have any real side effects but we had to go back once a week to the clinic and have my blood work done. And I had to get some magnesium and do some other things. And I was having some trouble with my stomach, my digestive system. But that had been going on really since the clinical trial that I had had with the epcoritamab and the two other drugs.
You told me a story, and I don't know where this fits into the sequence here, but kind of related to the CRS, your Wordle story. I just thought that was an interesting one.
This is actually back during, and I'm glad you brought that up. This was actually during the clinical trial when I was taking the curitumab and the other drugs. I just felt like I wasn't quite up to normal, you know, mentally, I guess. And so I decided, and I actually have we've interviewed Dr. Renbarger, and mm-hmm. I was in seeing Dr. Renbarger, and she goes, well, you know, you might try some puzzles and things. Sometimes that'll help. And I thought, well, I haven't played Wordle. I used to play Wordle I've never been a person that tried to do it every day. And, you know, but I thought, well, that's a good idea. So the next morning I decided, well, let's try the puzzle and see if her thinking is correct. And her thinking was more than correct because I put my first word in. If you play Wordle, you have a word you usually use for the first word. And then it tells you if you have any letters right or if they're in the right order. And then you go to a second word. Right. I could not come up with a second word. Mm. Not at all. I came back to it an hour later. I couldn't come up with a second word.
And that was not the way you played the game normally. You said you finished it almost every time.
I mean, I've missed them
occasionally,
once or twice or three times, and every time I've played. And so I just couldn't even come up with a second word, let alone getting to the end or getting the right word. And that lasted for a couple of weeks. And that was a little scary. But the good news was I did understand what was going on because we didn't talk about this before, but the CRS is what they were looking for when they observed me for 24 hours on the clinical trial. Mm-hmm. And while I didn't have any severe reaction, I had some milder reaction, some reduced mental capacity. I don't know what you call it, but I wasn't myself exactly. And again, then in the hospital, I had the little thing with Hoda and Jenna and,
And are you seeing them again?
I have not been. I've not been on the couch. I haven't been on the couch with them again.
You must have been real bad.
The only other thing that happened to me is there was one of the times when in my follow-up period, and I don't remember which visit it was, but the follow-up period, I had 4 visits in the clinic. And one of the times that they held the objects up in front of me, they had a clipboard. I couldn't come up with the word clipboard.
You knew what it was.
I knew what it was. I couldn't come up with the word. And ultimately I did, but it was after she had gone on to something else and I said, clipboard. But I knew that wasn't normal. I mean, I didn't fail the test because I eventually came up with it. But you could tell that these things do work on you and you're, you know, what you wouldn't know that your white blood cells, which are, you know, designed to fight infection and fight disease and all that kind of stuff, would affect your ability to think clearly. And a lot of people people have some severe reactions. I guess I need to say I was extremely lucky in that I did not have any severe reactions. The guy in the room next to me was getting released the day before I got released, and he looked not good, and he had been in the hospital 7 weeks.
Oh, man.
And he had had to go to ICU. A lot of people have fevers and end up in ICU. So I consider myself in the scheme of the CAR-T and the side effects that I was very, very lucky. Now, I can tell you My doctor, Dr. Ossie, did a wonderful job of, she tried to pick drugs that she thought I was going to have less side effects because I had had the bad situation with my clinical trial, which had just, you know, I just really just completed.
Yeah.
And so she picked Kymriah, which is the only CAR T therapy that is approved for children for me. And it says it's also used in some older adults. So I guess I fit that criteria.
Well, at least more so than young child.
Yeah, more so than young child. And also the bendamustine that she picked as the conditioning chemotherapy drug is also probably not one of the ones that they typically use. But I had just been in treatment. It wasn't like my cells weren't already kind of knocked down by the immunotherapy and whatever else. So I credit her that I had a pretty good experience. And she said she thought I would be out in a week and that it wouldn't be too bad. So where we were just before we went back to that and you asking a really great question, was that period after we came home. What I didn't talk about is there are some conditions when I came home. The first condition was I couldn't be alone for 30 days. Again, they were concerned about these side effects, CRS and ICANS. And when we got home the first day, excuse me, George Ann ran to the grocery store, and then we didn't talk about this for about a week later, but she goes, "You forgot to tell me I wasn't supposed to leave you." Nothing happened.
But then you had to get stuck with watchers like our buddy Gary, right? I mean,
well, no, I don't think Gary watched me. It was your brother Kirk.
Oh, that's even worse.
Kirk was my babysitter one day, but yeah. So someone had to be. My daughters came a couple of times, and but most of the time, Georgianne was able to be here. She just, the timing was really bad when I went in the hospital. They have a, how often, every 3 years that you have to get recertified as a trauma one rated hospital, Methodist hospital, and their certification was taking place at the exact same time I was in the hospital. So the timing wasn't very good for her, but she was able to be there some and to be with me most of the time, so it really worked out well. Again, I consider myself very lucky, but I did spend 30 days pretty much on the couch, sleepy. I vividly remember going in to the clinic and having them, you know, put there. I had to get some magnesium or something, and so, you know, that infusion takes a couple of hours because they put it in real slowly, and I would just fall asleep, and I could be sitting on the couch and fall asleep, and I finally figured out after the 30 days and I got off the anti-seizure medicine that I think, and I asked and have gotten some clinical response from some other people that, yeah, that was that medication that was causing me to be so tired and so lethargic.
What's my excuse? Because I sit on a couch and fall asleep too.
Yeah,
I don't understand that.
It's what are you low on?
Potassium. Yeah.
Potassium. It's your potassium level. So after the 30 days were up and I got off the anti-seizure medication and again I don't know that I was on pretty strong doses of antibiotics, which switched to an antibiotic that I again will take for a year. But I only take it 3 times a week. So, you know, I got off of a bunch of medication, and I think that probably, all of that probably added up. But, you know, again, the medications that I'm now on, I will continue to be on until next November, I assume. But got through that, and generally, you know, we had all my daughters and, or two of my daughters, and my wife and I had joined a Facebook group that about CAR T therapy. And we had seen that most everybody, as soon as they hit day 30, had a PET scan. But Dr. Rossi had mine scheduled for like what amounted to about day 45. She didn't tell us till we got to the office, but she did that on purpose. She just felt like that little extra time might make a difference in what the results said.
Okay.
Because a lot of times we see on this Facebook page that they'll have them at day 30, and sometimes there's no change, or maybe even they've seen some growth in their tumors or whatever. But then the one at day 60 or day 90 shows a completely different story. Yeah. And obviously, this therapy only works 50% of the time. So you really don't know. I was feeling better. So my assumption was that I was feeling great, you know, or not feeling great. I'm still only probably 85 or 90% because of the digestive issues that I'm continue to have. And I'm still a little tired and my strength isn't back where I want it to be. But overall, I feel pretty good. So day 45, thereabouts, rolls around and I scheduled for a PET scan. I go in, I really wasn't terribly anxious about the PET scan. Again, mostly probably because I felt good, but also because, and this is, you know, you get to a little bit of morbidity, more morbid talk here, but I've dealt with the fact that this is a disease that is probably what will kill me at some point in my life. And so I've kind of gone through that mentally, that whole process. And so, you know, I'm not afraid of those scans. I'm really not afraid of them, you know, because if they say that there's something there, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
What's next? We're in a really interesting time here where there seem to be a lot of new therapies and a lot of cool stuff happening.
Well, even CAR T's not finished. I mean, the things I've just read in the last 3 weeks is they're starting to move it to all forms of cancer, that it's
right.
So successful. So that 50% number, I think, is actually bumping up a little bit as they tweak various techniques with it. I mean, the concept is very good. You know, you think about what it is. Well, it's basically taking a system that could work if it's just given a little bit of a boost and doing exactly that, giving it that boost. So. And then I think you talked earlier in the series, way back at episode 1 or 2 or 3, about the whole idea that every year you're given with some of these is great these days because there's so much being developed day to day.
Right.
And so in 1 year, there could be tons more stuff available. So
right. Right. It used to be that people thought CAR T was the last. And again, CAR T didn't come about until about 2016.
Yeah.
And so it was, it's only been around for 7 or 8 years, and people thought that if you failed CAR T, that was it. That was your last hope, your last option. Well, since then, Kevin talked about the mAbs. They've decided that this epcoritamab is, and I can't, as Kevin said, my brain and remembering can't remember stuff is kicking in, but they use that as a it's now being used as a therapy where you get just that drug alone, maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months, and it's kind of a prophylactic kind of thing. You know, obviously if you're getting it, you've probably got some cancer, but they're using it to prolong people's lives and things, and just giving it more on a dose basis versus, you know, and again, maybe if nothing else, they're trying to stave things off until there's another new therapy.
So that's kind of what tamoxifen was, wasn't
right?
It, with breast
exactly.
cancer.
Yeah,
you got the treatments, and then they would kind of, in some cases, run you forever on tamoxifen, hoping to keep the
right
from
right.
popping back up. So that's what that's become already.
Right. So so that's already the next thing past CAR T. But even with that, there's now clinical trials. My CAR T is for the CD20 gene.
And there's the 21. And
there's
the 19.
A 19. Well, there's a 19 they're doing it. I mean, they're it's in trials, but they're giving people CD19. And so there is a 21 and there they're gonna continue. So,
and those are related. I mean, I don't know for sure, but you've been reading up on it. That's the protein,
right?
The particular protein on the cancer cell, right, that it binds to.
Right, and I guess I should go back and talk about this CAR T and kind of how it works.
Because it's fascinating. How does the question I have for you, because I've never got an answer for myself. Isn't it an immunotherapy of sorts in a sense? Because
yes,
it's boosting you. So it is. It's not like the mAbs, but it's still using the whole idea of your own cells that are already doing the job. They just need a little help.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's working on the same premises as an immunotherapy.
Yeah.
And the way they actually do it is they take and some of you may want to turn the podcast off when I tell you this, but they take the shell of a virus. And they insert these modified white cells, T cells actually.
Yeah.
They insert the modified T cells into this shell of a virus. And they use different viruses. And again, it's just the shell.
Yeah.
In my case...
Was it HIV that they used for you?
They use the HIV, yeah, virus shell.
Yeah.
And so I actually had to sign a paper that I knew that I could potentially... check or be tested positive for HIV, but I wouldn't have
because the yeah, yes.
They're
so
only using the cell,
the shell and,
as
and
a piece
up,
of a
and
HIV,
so that would be, yeah,
right.
Oh.
So there would be some piece of that in there,
yeah.
But I would not have HIV.
So you have to carry a card for that as well?
Well, it's the same card.
Oh, it's the same one, okay,
same card,
okay,
but. So they use this virus as the carrier, and the reason they started, I mean, Kymriah is one of the early products. They used the HIV virus is because they also found that it was the virus that found its way everywhere in people's body from the people that had AIDS. You know, that this virus went everywhere and was just wreaked havoc. And so they thought, what better transportation tool,
right,
to send these cells out into your body than this virus.
So doesn't it also cross the blood-brain barrier?
It
so
does.
So they can actually use,
yeah,
that
they use it for brain cancer as well.
Yeah, yeah, I thought I had read that they were.
Yeah, that's the reason they use a virus, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so, again, I don't know, I can't tell you because I haven't done the research what the other viruses that they empty out and use the shells of. But I think that affects a lot of the people in how, what their side effects are.
Sure.
Is probably what that outside shell is made of. And fortunately, probably because Kymriah has been around a long time, they've made it to where it doesn't have some of the more violent,
yeah,
side effects. Yeah. So, I was fascinated when they told me that, when I had to go in and I had to sign all these disclosures. I was, this woman who runs the program, she's not a doctor, but she runs the transplant program. She's just looking at me. And I think she's looking for what my reaction is going to be. And she goes, well, what do you think? And I said, I find that fascinating. And I don't know why, but I found it fascinating.
Yeah,
so.
I think the technology is, again,
yeah,
that's one of the reasons why I'm hopeful that we're going to be getting rid of a lot of these things over the next few years, is we're really starting to understand the mechanism and the way that's involved. And the body is extremely powerful on its own. We're just taking advantage of what the body,
right,
knows how to do and helping it out a little bit.
So. Well, we know that they're doing clinical trials with liver cancer, breast cancer,
yeah,
you know, and other forms, some brain cancers, they're doing a lot of neat stuff with with the monoclonal antibodies as well as these CAR T. There's different names. I have a friend who has melanoma, and they do a similar procedure, but it's not called CAR T. That if that's his next step, if he has to have any further treatment.
So he can have CAR T after what he's doing now.
Yeah, it's not,
even though they're similar.
Yeah, it's not CAR. It's not called CAR T, but it's
okay.
It's the same kind of a process.
Right.
And so I think that they think at least in the short term that's the future of cancer treatment. But right now it's a, like I said, in most cases there are some cancers where it's a second level treatment, but with what I have. It's a third level. It has to be the third line of treatment to be approved by the FDA, and probably to get your insurance to pay for it. And for those of you who have been living in a vacuum, there's been quite a ruckus lately about insurance and lack of insurance coverage. And I'm not going to take a position on what happened in New York City. But what I am going to say is that we have been extremely lucky. My insurance, and I'm going to call out all of my healthcare has taken place in the IU Health system. And I also am insured because my wife works at IU Health through the IU Health insurance program. And it's been phenomenal. They've paid for everything, you know, they've approved all of these treatments and not really created any backlash or anything like that. And I've read a lot of stories where that's not always the case. And people pay for this stuff out of their pockets, and they get bankrupt and do all kinds of stuff trying to stay alive. And so I am extremely blessed with the insurance we have, and you know, thank IU Health in a couple of ways for that, because one, I'm still here, and two, that they've continued to cover my medical expenses for the most part. So anyway.
Nice. So, but what was the result of the scans? I mean, everybody's waiting. You got all this audience sitting out there going, okay, but he said he got a scan. What happened?
Well, first of all, I had to wait just like they're waiting. I had to wait for the results to come back, and I had it late on a Thursday afternoon. So, Friday, you know, my daughters were texting me going, and one of my friends texting me going, you know, I know this sometimes takes a little while, but what have you found anything out yet? And the girls are going, have you been on your portal to see if there's any information on your portal? And I forget what Georgian and I were doing. We were out running errands, and I got an email actually that said there's new something new on your portal that's a result of a
test or lab.
Yeah. And so I went in, and you know, you read those things and you're not sure what you're reading. But there was a little phrase in there that said no evidence of disease, which is a really exciting thing to see. So maybe about 30 minutes later, we're actually at Costco, I think, when Dr. Rossi called, and she goes, have you read the portal? And I said, yes, I have. And I said, but I'm not exactly sure what it said. And she said, well, the tumor is gone, and there's no evidence of disease. And there was this other spot up by my lung that had been kind of concerning, and they weren't sure what it was. And she also said that, you know, that it was still there, but when they put a couple of different filters over it, it disappeared, which meant that it wasn't, it's an inflammation or infection or something that's really not, it's not cancer, at least. And so that was good news. So the tumor is now completely gone, there's no evidence of disease, which means at this very moment, with the technology we have today, they can't see any cancer. That doesn't mean that there's not any.
Right, there could be single cells out there waiting to get going, but...
But the good news is the CAR-T continues to work for 4 months, pretty much at minimum. They say sometimes it'll work up to 2 years. So the whole thought process of the CAR-T versus the other kinds of therapy is, in addition to killing tumors or whatever might be out there, it continues to work. And so it's still looking for those little single cells. And that's how CAR-T can also be a cure. In about 25% of cases, and this is 25 of the 100, not 25
of
the
50. Yeah.
25 of the 50. So half of those who have success with CAR-T are cured by CAR-T. And by cure, that means at least five years.
Right, that's standard.
That you go cancer-free for... And I told one of my daughters the other day, I don't use that term, that there's no evidence of disease, because you really never know if you're cancer-free. There's no technology that's good enough.
Cancer-free.
Right.
I think in reality, we all have cancer, of various kinds that right. pop up and just get taken care of in most cases.
Right.
So I think you would never find, or not never, I just think it's rare you would find a person who truly is cancer-free. But, you know, the other terms meaning that it's low enough that my body can now handle it without the boosts. And so, you know, that's...
So we're doing this podcast on December 26th. I actually found this stuff out on the 19th or something like that, last Friday. Friday morning. And so it was a really good Christmas. I mean, from the standpoint of, as I said, I wasn't very apprehensive about the results because, you know, while I'm having some issues digesting, but I wasn't having some of the other issues and my strength is coming back and all that kind of stuff. So I wasn't very apprehensive, but it was still exciting to hear the news.
Yeah.
And so we went out Friday night with our two kids that live in town and the grandchildren and had dinner. And I actually had a drink.
Did you enjoy your dinner?
We did. I mean, whenever you go out with three toddlers, it's exciting, to say the least.
Yeah. I guess I was more talking, did your stomach like your, I mean, were you okay with the?
Yeah, I ordered something that I'm very careful. I'm still very careful about what I eat. I think I told Kevin last week, I tried to, red meat is the thing that probably bothers me the worst. And I tried to eat a hamburger, and it tasted amazing, but it wasn't the right thing to do because for a couple of days after that, I didn't feel very good. So, you know, that'll come with time, hopefully, that my digestive system gets back into some kind of sync. And if not, you know, I'll probably go see another kind of doctor and see what we can do about that. But
or you'll just stop eating hamburgers.
Or stop eating red meat. But so it's all great news at this point. I do, I'll still have blood work every 3 months where they're looking to see if anything looks out of whack. And then I'll have my 6 month scans. And obviously, just like the last time, if I feel something that just doesn't feel right, I will call my oncologist and get her suggestion. And, you know, she may just say, oh, just call your family practice doctor. But again, this last time she said, let's get a CAT scan. So, so it's all good at this point, you know, until it's not. And you know, that's the thing of cancer. That's the thing with cancer. People try to compare. I had an uncle who died about 2 weeks ago, and he had just been diagnosed in October with liver cancer, and he died in mid-December. And people said, well, you know, what does that do to you? And the amazing thing is, what I've also found out with all this research I've done is everybody's cancer is different. Even if somebody else has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, it's not the same as mine.
Well, yours was visibly different than others. I mean,
right.
Sometimes there are subtle differences that you can't really identify. But in your case, your version of this was totally out of
right. Mind. I have extra nodal, which means that the individual cells actually are creating the cancer, versus typically it's lymphoma. Yeah. Lymph nodes. To date, I've not had cancer in any lymph nodes, which is highly unusual in lymphoma.
Yeah.
But I also understand that someone could have something very similar and have a different outcome and also have different feelings. So while I was very sad that my uncle died at a reasonably young age, he's 10 years older than me, so he's 75. It didn't affect me from the standpoint of feeling like that meant I was
right.
imminently going to die or something like that.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the reasons why the CAR T stuff holds such promise, is that even with the same exact diagnosis, the way that cancer does its thing is different. In this case, we're actually taking something from your body that knows that cancer. It has experienced that particular cancer. It knows what protein surface proteins are being exposed and to be used. And so it really is targeting it to your lymphoma, not Bill's lymphoma or Steve's lymphoma. It's your lymphoma, and I think that's why it holds such promise. I mean, the initial immunotherapies did the same kind of thing. It was understanding from your body, taking messages from your own body. And I think we're in a place now where it looks like they're taking that whole concept and just running with it, and things are exploding weekly.
Right.
With
right. There was an announcement last week about breast cancer that the FDA approved CAR-T as a treatment for breast cancer, which it had just been experimental until that.
Well, the fact that you're using it now, what, 8 years after they started it?
And it's FDA approved.
Right, and usually the FDA takes minimum 10 years, you know, looking at drugs and things. So the fact that they're approving as quickly as...
And breast cancer, they've only been looking at it, I think I read, for 18 months, and they're already approving it. So,
Well, hopefully that means we're getting a little smarter about it. I mean, it's important for us to review these things, but when people have life, you know, altering and potentially ending diseases, the fact that we would say, well, we're not going to give them this, it could hurt them.
And we'll go back to, I said I had a clinical trial.
Yeah.
Why did I have a clinical trial? Because epcoritamab is not approved as a second line drug for lymphoma. So I had to be in a clinical trial to get it.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's still some of that. It's approved as a third line, not a second line. So I had to get in a clinical trial. Glad I did.
Yeah.
Worked very well. Turns out I have a friend who works for the company that manufactures the exact drug I had. But it all worked out well. And, you know, so we're gonna do things a little differently. Last time I decided I really wanted to work hard at getting in shape and getting back to where I was. And about the time I got there, I got sick again. So this time...
So this time you're going to be a sloth, drink a lot of beer, watch TV.
No, I still want to get in shape, but I didn't make travel a priority the last time. And so we already have a trip planned for the warmer climates later on, still in the winter. And then we're going to take a cruise to Alaska in the summertime, and 40th
anniversary.
Oh, yes, we'll be married 40 years this year, and Georgianne also has a significant birthday.
Oh,
but the anniversary definitely is right after, or is right before the cruise. Her birthday's a little bit after the cruise.
Hopefully it's not, 40 is not your last year as a married couple, because what you just forgot, the look on her face.
No, I just, just the 40, I was just confused.
Okay.
And I'm sticking to that.
Of course, you are recorded, having said this.
Yeah, I'm recorded and on video. So, but it's a pretty exciting feeling, and we're going to, again, I'm going to continue to try to get stronger and work out and do all those things, but I'm not going to do that at the expense of living my life at the same time.
Which really is an attitude we should all take. We should all just accept that we're dying at some point and not say no to things, to continue to take advantage of the good things.
I challenge everyone. I guess if I had a thing, one of the things that I found out mostly from Dr. Renbarger, who again has been a guest on this podcast, is that you know, if we aren't finding joy in particularly work and things like that, that we should at least try to find joy in it. And if we can't, maybe we need to think about doing something else. Again, financially, some people don't have those options. Again, we're fortunate that we've got some retirement savings and some things. And but I'm much more motivated about things I'm passionate about. That's why I do this podcast.
Yeah.
That's exactly why I do this podcast. We talked early on about if we could help one person. And we identified, I think, in our last podcast that I had a couple of people contact me. Since then, I've had a couple more people contact me. In fact, one of them is a distant relative that I have no idea how he figured out that I had a podcast. He sent me on Thanksgiving Day, he sent me a Facebook message. We weren't Facebook friends, so I had to accept the message and friend him. that he had listened to all the podcasts. He also has a similar diagnosis to me. It's not extranodal, but he has diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and he's listened to all the podcasts, and he's had two lines of treatment, so CAR-T is his next line of treatment. He knew I had just had the CAR-T. Obviously, I didn't know anything about Thanksgiving, what the results were, because I was feeling pretty sick at that point, actually, and that kind of thing. But so we're going to continue to try to do this and try to help out in any other ways we can to make sure that other people are. And as I said, I'm going to post, there's some videos. I did a daily diary of the days I was in the hospital because, and I actually continued it for quite a few days, but nothing really was happening, you know. So I don't know that that's going to be of interest to somebody. If somebody ever wants to see that, they can ask me about it. I do have a day-by-day diary, a video diary of, you know, of how things went after my CAR-T treatment. But I think, again, I'm going to post the actual, when I got the injection, I'm going to post that. And I will also share, I've already shared it to my on my personal Facebook page, but I'll put my announcement about the being no evidence of disease and the tumor being gone. I'll put that on the normal What's That Like page as well for people to view.
And do your notes have anything about your date that evening with Hoda? I just want more details on that, you know.
Yeah, they do not. They do not.
You're not one of those. It's not one of those. You don't tell about those relationships.
No, I don't tell about those relationships. It was just weird. There wasn't any relationship. I was just sitting between them on the couch while they were live on the air. I don't know if they're. I think they're live on the air, yeah. But it was just bizarre. Yeah.
But as real as it could be.
It was. I was there.
Yeah.
I mean. Only for a couple of seconds, and right. Then I wasn't there.
But
I mean,
it's freaky
but it
feeling,
felt it felt like I was sitting there, and they were looking at me, and I was looking at them, and I was like, "What in the hell just happened?"
And were you thinking they must have just asked me a question, and I'm not responding?
Yeah,
I'm looking stupid here.
Yeah, I don't. But then I was back in the bed, so yeah. It was a bizarre thing, but again, you know, I through this. Process. I've had some bizarre things happen, most of them being mental because of the way that again, you know, there's a saying with cancer, which is worse, the cancer or the cure.
Oh, yeah.
And the cure can be difficult. I'm not going to, don't let me, don't think that the cancer, the process of getting treatment and cancer is easy. It's not. It's very, very difficult.
And you said something the other day. I don't know if you want to share what you said to me about that on the podcast or not, but about the how bad you felt.
What I said was, if I were asked to go through another round of immuno/chemotherapy, which they're usually in combination, this last time I said, absolutely, I'm ready, let's go. I would probably still say,
yeah.
Let's go. But I'd think about it for a minute because of how difficult that was.
But I think that's important for listeners who may start to have same
right.
issues, is that don't make your first decision. Think
right.
it through deeply because you're in an altered state and it is going to be tough. But
right.
look, in your case, you know, it was a great decision.
Right. And in my case, again, the CAR-T therapy was much better than either of my chemotherapy regimens.
Right. Well, and I think that's, again, where we're headed with treatments is, I mean, chemo is essentially poison. We
right.
basically, and cancer cells are weaker than other cells. So they just poison you to the point that they don't kill you.
Right.
You know, and
bring you to the edge of death, right?
Yeah. It's similar. I always think of this, you know, the webworms that we see every 5-10
right.
years. I read something about them interesting. They, as a group, they know how much of the tree they can eat before they have to stop or it'll die, so that the tree stays alive for them to get it the next time they come around. So somehow, this may not even be true, but I read this and thought it was fascinating that they have some knowledge of how far they can push that tree before they have to stop. And in a sense, this is what we're trying. Yeah. We're playing a game. How far can I push Dan where it's too much? And as everybody is different, that amount is different.
Yeah, they say that the second round, which it's cumulative, so it gets more and more difficult.
So we're getting away from poisoning you to taking advantage of your own body's ability to heal itself. Sometimes it just needs some help, and that will be a little less, at least.
Yeah, the immunotherapy was tough on its own. I'm not going to say it wasn't, because even after they discontinued the chemo, it was still a...
Well, essentially, that's what many people died of COVID, was not the COVID itself. It was their immune system overreacting killing them.
Right.
So, you know, immune system's pretty powerful. But again, it's yours, and it knows you a little better, and it's more tuned to your body. So I just think we get rid of chemos at some point and go start with immuno and other versions of the immuno.
Yeah, I think we'll get there. I mean, I think technology is moving at the right pace, and lots of, you know, still, you know, we're on this Facebook page, and people from other countries, CAR T is a relatively new process for in some parts of the world. Other parts of the world, it's not. But it's interesting to see how that, you know, the more intellectual countries tend to be leading those kinds of things, and the poorer countries, as we know, tend to lag behind.
And that may have nothing to do with the development as much as it just has to do with price.
Right.
I mean, what's the CAR T?
The retail price is somewhere between $1 and $1.5 million. Yep. And my the drug, just the drug by itself that I was approved in the clinical trial. And in that case, because it was a clinical trial, my insurance company didn't even have to pay for that particular drug. But the cost of that drug is $450,000 for the nine sessions. So now again, insurance companies always get discounted prices on that stuff. And so what they pay, but again, I'm so thankful that I have an insurance company didn't even, as far as I know, I didn't have the conversations with them, but as far as I know, didn't blink. They stood up and said, yeah, we gotta do this. So.
Well, as these things become more popular, hopefully that the cost will.
Oh, and I think the cost should definitely drop down, especially because I'm sure there's a lot of money going into research.
Right.
Still. And they've got the drug, you know, like them or hate them, the drug companies can't do that research without putting it into the cost of the product.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a funny system we have in America. You know, this capitalism is a funny thing. And in other countries, yeah, things are cheaper and things are different. But it's how it is in America, the United States of America. We do things a little differently, and so it gets brought back into the price of the drug. And so, yeah, we'll add, again, you know, as just like with generics, some of these drugs like the cisplatin, there's a generic version now. So
it was used so much.
It was used so much that all the copyrights have expired and trademark.
Yeah.
It's all expired and anybody can manufacture it. And so it's an inexpensive treatment, but some of the other, and that's true of some of the other drugs that are used in cancer treatment, but these new drugs, they got to pay for the development. And again, I'm not taking a position on that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I'm very fortunate.
Yeah. Well, you're always a good interview yourself, but I'm looking forward to the fact that you're going to get back to being the host of the show and talking to other people, because we don't have to worry about you anymore, right? So that's my my hope for this going forward, is that we don't have to talk to you again about you and Hoda, because that just makes me so, it just crushes my heart to think she was sitting on the couch with you. You know?
So I'm going to close things out with this. First of all, I guess I want to thank everybody for bearing with us in the about a 10-month absence of Well, maybe not that much with no episodes, because we had some in
the can that we put out.
But probably since August, I don't think we've put anything out. And that's mostly because I wasn't in a position, and Kevin had a different employment situation, but I wasn't in a position really to do a lot. And we'll get back on doing these on a more regular basis. And again, I think it's important that, like I said, that people realize that they have options if you're, you know, and the other thing is to ask questions. I still go back to my original diagnosis. You gotta, if things don't seem right, keep pushing, because that's kind of what it took in the beginning. Now that they know what the cancer is, obviously they're all over it, but getting to that point sometimes is difficult. And so, you know, don't be afraid to be your own advocate or have an advocate. My wife, my kids, two of my kids in particular, are very good advocates. And so, you know, go to the doctor, take somebody with you if you're alone, you know, if you're a single person, take somebody with you that maybe will think about things in a more objective manner and advocate for yourself, because nobody else is going to do it.
Yeah, and I've discovered it's not that the doctors are bad, it's just they're overwhelmed as well, you know, with the way things are going, and sometimes they'll just not realize that things are more serious than they appeared, and so you have to be the one pushing, saying, hey, what do we do next? And,
right.
And it's, again, it's not because there's anything wrong with those doctors, it's just they've got a job to do with 50 of you or 100 of you or 200 of you, you know. And
whatever number it is.
So, yeah,
and the other thing I think is to keep, as Kevin hit on earlier, is to keep yourself objective. Try to maintain that objectivity, because you do sometimes jump to conclusions. And I think it's okay. You know, a lot of cancer survivors have a lot of anxiety around scans, and I don't mean to downplay that. I think if that's you, then I understand you have to go through that. It's not something that, at least recently, has been a problem for me. And even with the reoccurrence, it's the scan. I don't have scan anxiety, but I know some people have it really bad. With that, I'm gonna, I guess, thank our sponsors again. Gordon Bonham for providing wonderful music for our intro and exit, and Kat Fryan for the artwork that's behind me or on the Facebook page or on the website. And again, if you want to find those, it's Normal What's That Like. We're everywhere. Thanks.